Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second hour of the Arizona Republic. This is the Friday, November 22nd, 2024 issue, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. During this hour, I'll be covering the obituaries, then move to the business news, then local sports. We'll have some opinion columns, and I'll close the broadcast with the horoscope and the funnies. So I hope you enjoy the program. Here are the obituaries for today. Douglas Deacon Doug Davis, 66, of Gilbert. Anthony Gentile, 74, no town listed. Anna Laverne Jones, 73, of Phoenix. Richard McDonnell, 82, of Peoria. Dominic Dom Sandoval, no town listed. Catherine Western, 40, of Prescott, Arizona. And those are the obituaries for today. I'll move over to the business news. The first article is titled, ASU has won high-tech R&D role. Will drive innovation in semiconductor packaging, by Russ Wiles of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. A team led by Arizona State University and a Tempe company, Deca Technologies, have qualified for up to $100 million in federal funds to drive innovation in semiconductor packaging, which involves the way chips are protected and connected to the electronic devices that they power. The National Institute of Standards and Technology, part of the U.S. Department of Commerce, announced the award November 21st. More than 100 applications from universities and others were submitted for the research project. The project aims to drive innovation and expand manufacturing capacity in domestic microchip packaging to help the U.S. regain leadership in an area that's been led by foreign rivals. It's part of an $11 billion allocated for research and development under the CHIPS and Science Act, which also is helping to subsidize the reshoring of semiconductor manufacturing, among other initiatives. For example, the government recently finalized up to $6.6 billion in grants for the Phoenix operation of Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. In a statement, ASU President Michael Crow called the $100 million award a critical step for U.S. semiconductor independence in the area of expertise in which we are in direct competition with China. Specifically, the project will focus on designing and developing molded core substrates. Often made of silicon, substrates are the thin slices of material that serve as the foundation on which the microelectronic devices are made. The ASU project will focus on accelerating R&D leading to commercial development of new technologies, the strengthening of domestic supply chains, expansion of workforce development, and boosting U.S. prominence in the field. Over the past three or so decades, packaging functions have moved mainly to Asia to take advantage of lower cost labor. But the lack of domestic capacity has resulted in a huge gap in technology and expertise in the U.S., said Jason Conrad, an ASU officer who serves as program director of SHIELD USA, which is short for Substrate-Based Heterogeneous Integration Enabling Leadership Demonstration. The risks of so much foreign reliance also include national security threats and supply chain vulnerability, he said. 8 ASU faculty members will be involved in the research project, along with students, over the 5-year term of the award, Conrad said. In addition to DACA technology, the SHIELD USA team includes major semiconductor companies, AMD, IBM, NXP, Synopsys, Cirrus, Micro Devices, and Analog Devices. The companies will provide test chips and support for the technology. The University of Maryland also is participating in the project. Craig Bishop, Chief Technology Officer at DECA Technologies, called the collaboration a fantastic example of a university working in close partnership with industry to drive innovation. Bishop and Conrad will head the ASU-led consortium. And that's the end of the first article, ASU Has Won High-Tech R&D Role, by Russ Wiles of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. The title of the second article is Layoffs Coming to Boeing Mesa Plant. Company to cut 10% of its global workforce, by Maritza Dominies of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. The Boeing Company announced plans to lay off 184 workers at its Mesa plant amid larger plans to cut 10% of its global workforce. The notice was published on Monday to the state's Arizona Job Connection website to comply with federal law that requires employers to provide advance notice of mass layoffs. In a statement from the company, a spokesperson wrote the company is adjusting its workforce levels to align with its financial reality and a more focused set of priorities. We are committed to ensuring our employees have support during this challenging time, according to the statement. Employees at the Mesa plant were notified of the layoffs and will leave the company in mid-January, according to the company. Eligible employees will receive severance pay, career transition services, and subsidized health care benefits up to 3 months after leaving Boeing, the company said. Boeing's operations in Arizona are focused on helicopter manufacturing, flight testing, and satellite network support. Since 2017, Boeing has delivered 244 remanufactured Apache helicopters to the U.S. Army and 24 new-build aircraft to an international customer. Mesa is home to the Advanced Composites Fabrication Center and home to Centers of Excellence for Metals, Composites, and Electrical Fabrication, not only for the Apache, but also for nearly every program in the Boeing portfolio, according to the company. Boeing is Mesa's third largest employer and is among the top 100 employers in Arizona. The company employs more than 4,800 people in engineering, manufacturing, finance, human resources, and other roles. In October, Boeing announced its plan to lay off 17,000 workers, or 10% of its total workforce, USA Today reported. The announcement comes after a year when safety concerns over its commercial airplanes and strikes have plagued the company. That's the end of the article. You can reach the author at maritza.dominguez@arizonarepublic.com or 480-271-0646. And the name of the article was Layoffs Coming to Boeing Mesa Plant. And the last business article today is titled Warren Says Bank's Asset Cap Must Stay, highlights Wells Fargo's issue in letter to feds, by Pete Schroeder of Reuters. The Federal Reserve must not remove Wells Fargo's $1.95 trillion asset cap until the bank has fixed its risk management and compliance issues. Top Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren told the U.S. Central Bank on Wednesday. In a letter to Fed Chairman Jerome Powell and the central bank's regulatory chief Michael Barr, Warren said the Fed must reject Wells Fargo's reported appeal to have the punishment imposed in 2018 lifted until it can show it can properly manage the risks associated with running a large bank. Spokesperson for Wells Fargo and the Fed declined to comment on the letter, which was sent by Reuters. Bloomberg reported in September that Wells Fargo had sent a third-party review of its risk and control overhauls to the Fed in a bid to end the unprecedented cap imposed following the bank's long-running fake accounts scandal and other issues. Republican President-elect Donald Trump is set to overhaul bank regulations and slash burdensome rules, boosting analysts' expectations that the cap could be removed as early as next year and alarming many Democrats in favor of tough rules. A Wall Street critic and one-time presidential candidate, Warren will next year become the top Democrat on the Senate Banking Committee. Long a thorn in Wells Fargo's side, Warren cannot force the Fed's hand, but her letter can pressure it to take a tough line and highlight the bank's missteps. Warren pointed to regulatory actions against Wells Fargo since 2018, including in September when the Comptroller of the Currency dinged the bank for shortcomings in policing money laundering. The country's fourth largest lender is grappling with a class action lawsuit over its diversity hiring practices, she also noted. Wells Fargo CEO Charlie Scharf has repeatedly said upgrading the bank's risk and control framework has been a top priority, and the bank has convinced regulations to terminate six regulatory consent orders since 2019. In response to Warren's request at a 2018 hearing, Powell committed that the Fed would put any decision to lift the asset cap to a vote of its Board of Governors. On Wednesday, Warren reminded him of that promise and called on the Fed to make public any third-party review Wells submitted as part of its bid to lift the cap. That completes the article. The title was Warren Says Bank's Asset Cap Must Stay, by Pete Schroeder of Reuters. And that ends the business news for today, so we're going to move to the local sports scene. Our first article is the Big 12 title game at stake for ASU-BYU, by Michelle Gardner of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. It will be the biggest Arizona State football game in the past decade when Brigham Young visits Saturday. Both teams are in contention for a spot in the Big 12 championship game, but this game will eliminate one of them. ASU is coming off a 24-14 win at Kansas State, while BYU is fresh off a 17-13 loss that took it out of the spot as clear frontrunner. Coach Kenny Dillingham acknowledged his opponent will have a little extra motivation and wasn't happy his team seemed to have lost a little edge earlier this week in practice. "We've just got to make sure that we're not comfortable," he said. "It's really easy to get comfortable when you've had success, and everybody tells you how good you are, and we're trying to fight against that, but that's challenging. Human nature comes into effect. Human nature, there's a reason it's challenging, and they're coming in here pissed off. So if we're not prepared to play a team that's pissed off with everything on the line, it's not going to be pretty." The game sold out on Wednesday. Let's take a closer look at the matchup. Number 14, Brigham Young. 9-1, and 6-1 at number 21, Arizona State, 8-2, and 4-2. The time and site is 1:30 p.m., Saturday, Mountain America Stadium. TV, ESPN, Dave Posch, play-by-play, Dusty Devercheck, analyst, Radio Arizona Sports, 98.7 FM, with Tim Healy and Jeff Van Raphorst. Last time they met, BYU won the last meeting 27-17 in Provo in 2021. That was the game in which ASU had 16 penalties for 121 yards, including a handful of false start penalties. Like this season, both schools went into that game ranked. ASU was number 19 and BYU number 23. The series. This will be the 29th meeting between the teams, with ASU holding a 20-8 advantage. The last time the teams played in Tempe was in 1997, with BYU winning 13-10 on a fourth-quarter field goal. The storyline. No one would have thought these two teams would be in the Big 12 title hunt 4 months ago, but that is the case. ASU was picked dead last in the preseason poll, while BYU was 13th. The Cougars were the front runner before being upset by Kansas 17-13 last Saturday, while ASU furthered its cause with a 24-14 victory at Kansas State, which had not lost a home game this season. Both teams are in this week's CFP ranking, with BYU at 14, dropping 8 spots after that loss, and ASU breaking in for the first time this season at number 21. The coaching matchup. ASU, Kenny Dillingham, second year, 11-11. 34 is the youngest head coach in the FBS, and came to ASU in November 2022 after serving as offensive coordinator at Oregon, where he mentored eventual first-round draft pick Bo Nix. He's a local product out of Chaparral and served on the staffs at Auburn, Memphis, and Florida State. BYU, Kalani Sitake, ninth year, 70-42. 49 is a 2000 graduate of BYU, where he played running back. He now heads the program for which he played under Hall of Fame coach Lavelle Edwards. He is the 14th head coach in BYU history, but just the fourth since 1972, and is the first FBS head football coach of Tongan descent. BYU will win if it doesn't rely on last-second heroics. The Cougars won their first 9 games, but that unbeaten mark went by the wayside last week. 2 of their victories came in the closing seconds, and those are the wins over Oklahoma State and Utah, which are a combined 7-13 overall and 1-13 in Big 12 play. ASU has done a good job of making plays down the stretch and closing out games, so the Cougars aren't going to want it to come down to that. It contains the Leavitt-Tyson connection. When ASU needs a big play, it is usually Jordan Tyson on the receiving end. He has 8 touchdowns in the past 6 games and 624 yards, 104.0 yards per game, on 44 catches in that span. Tyson now has 9 receiving touchdowns this season, the most since N'Keal Harry had 9 in 2018. The 9 receiving touchdowns are tied with Colorado's Travis Hunter for tops in the Big 12 and 8th in the FBS. One of BYU's strengths is its secondary, so this is a matchup to keep an eye on. The defense lives up to its billing. The Cougars are allowing just 315.3 yards per game, first in the conference and 20th in 133 FBS schools. The charge is led by sophomore linebacker Harrison Taggart, who boasts 63 tackles, 4 quarterback hurries, 3 breakups, and a forced fumble. Sophomore linebacker Isaiah Glasker has 49 tackles, 2 interceptions, 4 breakups, 2 hurries, and a forced fumble. BYU is just 12th in the Big 12 in offense, so it is in this position largely because of its defense. Arizona will win if it can run the ball. This is usually ASU's strong suit, and the Sun Devils would do well to establish that early, because BYU is second in the Big 12 and ranks 16th nationally in passing defense, 176.1 yards per game, and it leads the country in interceptions. Of course, ASU has also done a good job of not turning the ball over. Sam Levitt has been picked off only 4 times in 10 games. You need some passing to keep the opponent from loading the box, but this could be another big day for Cam Skidaboo. It maintains an edge. ASU always seems to play better when it is the underdog and flying under the radar. That isn't the case anymore. This is one of the biggest games in the country this weekend, and all eyes will be on what is going on in Tempe. Dillingham admitted the team was too comfortable earlier in the week. He'll hope that edge comes back when it's kickoff time. It wins the turnover battle. ASU forced 3 last week and lost only 1. This is another category where the two teams are eerily similar. In fact, they are tied for 1st in the conference and 14th in the country in turnover margin. ASU has 16 takeaways and only 7 giveaways. ASU has more takeaways, 22, but also has more turnovers, 13. They said it. ASU coach Kenny Dillingham on BYU coach Kalani Sitake. He's one of the best defensive minds in football. I played him multiple times. He's a phenomenal defensive coach. He definitely is in the top 3 of the best people in the profession from a head coaching perspective. You would want to have your child play for him. He's just an unbelievable person. You can just see his energy with the players, his connection with the players. That's why they play really hard for him, and they play extremely hard. This team plays hard and physical because the connection that you can see that he builds. Personnel notes. ASU has 3 players out for the season. DL Anthony Cooper, DB Cole Martin, and RB Relic Brown. Wide receiver Jake Smith, who missed last week's game, was dubbed questionable to doubtful earlier in the week by Dillingham. DL Justin Woodley, who came out of last week's game with an apparent leg injury, practiced all week and is expected to go. Cross connections. Dillingham and BYU assistant strength and conditioning coach Christian Tupu were on the same 2022 Oregon coaching staff. Tupu, who was also a member of the Arizona Cardinals practice squad in 2014, was also on the staff at USC when ASU DB coach Brian Carrington was there in 2021. BYU offensive line coach T.J. Woods coached under ASU offensive coordinator Marcus Arroyo at UNLV from 2021 to 2022 when Arroyo was the head coach. Woods was the offensive line coach and run game coordinator. The game also features brothers on opposite sides, as Trayson Burgot as a backup quarterback for BYU with Trenton and Coben at ASU, also playing in reserve roles. Trenton and BYU's Chika Ebenoa played at Marana High together. BYU offensive line Sam Daw and ASU wide receiver Xavier Guillory were teammates at Idaho State in 2021. ASU linebacker Tate Romney was a part of the BYU football team before transferring to ASU for the 2023 season. Romney, running back DeCarlos Brooks, wide receiver Justin Spann, and BYU tight end Nason Coleman, and O.L. Sione Lingano, all graduated from Chandler High. ASU O.L. Kyle Scott and BYU quarterback Jake Ratzlaff played together at Riverside CC, California, in 2022. By the numbers, 66 points scored by ASU in the middle 8 minutes, last four of the second quarter and first four of the third. It is an area Dillingham has emphasized. The Sun Devils have given up only 13 points in that same time frame. 17 interceptions by BYU this season. That is tied for first in the country with James Madison and California. The Cougars have also gotten those interceptions from 11 different players. Senior cornerback Jacob Robinson leads the team with 3. 56. Number of players on the BYU roster who have served on Mormon missions. They have traversed 32 different countries and speak 17 languages. 88.7. The Pro Football Focus grade for ASU quarterback Sam Leavitt. Among players with at least 400 snaps, Leavitt is the nation's highest-graded freshman player, true or redshirt, on either side of the football, leading Ohio State receiver Jeremiah Smith by 3.5 points. It is the eighth best among all FBS freshman quarterbacks in the PFF era since 2015. Of the 7 players ahead of him, 6 have started an NFL game this season. Brock Purdy, Trevor Lawrence, Caleb Williams, Drake May, C.J. Stroud, and Spencer Rattler. 431. Win total for BYU in the past 50 seasons. That trails only Ohio State, Oklahoma, Alabama, Georgia, Michigan, Nebraska, Penn State, and Florida State. 3,329. Snaps played by ASU center Leif Fatanu, third most among active FBS centers, behind only New Mexico State's Cannon Yarrow at 3,388 and Texas's Jake Majors at 3,333. He has started 47 consecutive games out of his total 53 total starts. He started all 12 games for the Sun Devils a year ago, playing all but one snap of the season. His helmet came off. Who will win and why? Arizona State 32, BYU 28. Both teams have so much to play for, it should be quite the showdown. ASU has all the momentum and is playing with house money at this point, so there is no pressure on the Sun Devils from that standpoint. ASU hasn't lost in Tempe this season, so we'll give the home team the nod. That's the end of the article. The title was Big 12 Title Game at Stake for ASU-BYU by Michelle Gardner of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. I'll take a moment to remind those of you that may have tuned in late, this is the second hour of the Arizona Republic Today, the Friday, November 22nd, 2024 issue, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. The second article today is titled, Give Buddha Credit. Baker is an unsung hero. So let's sing about him as Cardinals keep on rolling. By Greg Moore, a columnist for the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. Do me a favor and show Buda Baker some love. Buy a jersey, make a sign, start a chant, make a tailgate recipe, Buda's brisket. Say his name on the radio. First-time caller, long-time listener. Smoke some Buda? What? It's legal. Tackle somebody. Make 12 friends and call yourselves the Baker's Dozen. Go to the bakery. Become a school safety. Plan a field trip to Tibet. Get a license plate that says Bake 3RFN. Do something, anything, because the Cardinals' ball-hawking safety is getting overlooked by casual fans and Vegas odds makers, despite being second in the league in official stats like tackles and first in unofficial stats like how the hell did he make that play? And it's on you, Cardinals fans, because Baker isn't going to do anything to draw attention to himself except make plays. For me, Baker said Thursday at the Dignity Health Arizona Cardinals Training Center in Tempe, I'm not overlooked when I'm on that football field. Guys know who I am. Players know who I am. Coaches come up to me after the game. They know who I am. I just want to win. BetMGM has odds for Defensive Player of the Year, and Buda's chances of winning are 0.0. He's got some jargon next to his name that doesn't make sense to people who have any sense. Off the board. This is despite being the undisputed leader of a surprisingly good defense on a first-place team. At the end of the day, Baker said, I don't really care about that at all. When you're on the field, that's the only thing that matters. Seeing who makes All-Pro or the Pro Bowl, it doesn't make me feel any type of way. I just want to win. I want to get the opportunity for myself, but also the other guys, the younger guys, to win games and hopefully make it deep into the playoffs. Watching Buda Baker play is like watching a psychic with a pocket full of firecrackers. He's usually there early, just waiting to blow something. I find it comforting finding success within myself. How can I get better as a person, as a player? Me being the best version of myself that I can be, that's all that matters. Signed, Buda Baker. I can't tell you how many times I've seen this guy in the backfield threatening to take the handoff or steal a pitch. He diagnoses plays like a TV doctor identifies mysterious diseases. I'm a film junkie, Baker said. Some people might watch Netflix. Some people might watch TV or other things. I like to watch film. Seeing what a quarterback looks like, what he likes to throw in his quick game. What are his steps in the quick game versus intermediate versus deep throws? Just a whole lot of understanding the game. Another thing about Buda is that he's always crashing into something. If this were the 80s, we'd be talking about him like he was Ronnie Lott. If he had hair, we'd be comparing him to Troy Polamalu. If he had a motorcycle, we'd be arguing over who was crazier, Buda Baker or Evel Knievel. Some of the guys ahead of Baker on the Player of the Year lists are players everybody knows. T.J. Watt, Nick Bosa, Miles Garrett, Micah Parsons, Sauce Gardner, Max Crosby. Some are names that football junkies know. Chris Jones, Trey Hendrickson, Will Anderson, Fred Warner, Pat Surtain II, Dexter Lawrence. Some are players I've never heard of, and I watch football for a living. Finding success within myself. Buddha isn't worried about any of it. I don't find it comforting getting success from other people, Baker said. I find it comforting finding success within myself. How can I get better as a person, as a player? Me being the best version of myself that I can be, that's all that matters. My family, the people who really know me, they know exactly what it is, and that's all that matters. Part of the problem is that Buddha Baker is a victim of the franchise he plays for. The Cardinals don't have the clout of the Cowboys, Raiders, or Steelers. It is what it is. Part of it is in the modern NFL, safeties get treated slightly better than stray dogs and cats. 9 of the past 10 defensive players of the year have been pass rushers. The last safety to be named to the league's top defender was Polamalu in 2010. It was the end of an era. 4 defensive backs, Ed Reed, Bob Sanders, Charles Woodson, and Polamalu, won the honors between 2004 and 2010. Since then, crickets. But we don't have to play into that around here. We can show the guy the love that the others don't, and we can hope Team President Michael Bidwell and General Manager Monty Ossenfort do the same. Baker is a free agent at the end of the year, and his market value is sure to be high. I'm not a guy to spend other people's money, but it seems like Baker is the kind of player I'd figure out a way to appreciate. That completes the article, Giving Buddha Credit, by Greg Moore, a columnist for the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. And I'll turn to the Suns now with this article, How Knicks Exploited Suns, Losing Streak at 5, by Dwayne Rankin of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. The Phoenix Suns continue to lose without Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal, dropping their 5th straight, 138-122, to the New York Knicks before a sellout crowd of 17,071 Wednesday night at Footprint Center. That's the most points the Suns, 9-7, have allowed this season. They are now 1-6, minus Durant, and haven't won since Durant and Beal have been out with left calf strain injuries. The Suns hope that these two can return for next week's NBA Cup game against the Los Angeles Lakers, pushing them to return but also being careful during their rehab process. Devin Booker paced the Suns with 33 points. Royce O'Neal broke out of a 3-point slump with a 5-of-10 effort from deep in scoring 17 points. Jusuf Nurkić returned from a left ankle strain to post a double-double of 14 points and 12 boards, but the Knicks splattered all over Phoenix's defense with a 10-of-11 start from the field. Making their first 8 shots, the Knicks, 9-6, raced out to a 14-point advantage. The Suns, 9-7, cut that deficit to 9, but New York answered with a 7-0 burst to go up 16 and maintained a double-digit lead the rest of the game. The Knicks led by as many as 24 points as they shot 58.1% overall, going 19 of 39 from 3. Phoenix's 8-1 start has gone from being impressive to serving a cushion, as Booker called it before Wednesday's game, to absorb this rash of injuries and consecutive defeats. Here are 3 takeaways from Wednesday's lopsided loss to end a brutal 7-game stretch in 11 days. This was the first game this season Phoenix never led. Suns made it too easy for Knicks. The Suns came into the season stressing the importance of individual pride on defense. That was sorely lacking Wednesday night. Knicks guard Jalen Brunson gives everyone the business, but he made it look too easy, regardless of who or how the Suns guarded him. Remember, he dropped what was then a career-high 50 on the Suns the last time he was in this arena in a win. He continued his usual stop and start, pull-up, drive, and three-ball offensive arsenal, leading all scorers with 36 points Wednesday. He got more than enough help. All five Knicks starters reached double figures. Karl Anthony Towns posted a double-double of 34 points and 10 rebounds. Josh Hart went for 14 for 19 points, and OG Anunoby added 14. Michael Bridges scored 16 points, and Cameron Payne added 12 off the bench against their former team. The Knicks took some tough shots, but they looked comfortable in doing so. The Suns didn't stress them out with pressure or make them rethink with physicality. Trump offered minimal rim protection in yielding 60 points in the paint, marking the fourth time this season the Suns have allowed that stat. Whether it was Hart, Brunson, Anunoby, or Towns, when the Knicks decided to attack the basket, they finished or got a good look at the basket. If that wasn't enough, Phoenix didn't get back on defense when turning the ball over. That led to New York scoring 28 points in transition. In short, the Suns gave away easy ones to a team that was already cooking. Can Knicks dethrone defending champs in Eastern Conference? The Boston Celtics made a ring night statement against the Knicks in the season opener, tying a single-game NBA record with 29 made threes. Boston led by as many as 35 points in a 132-109 victory over New York. They don't meet again until February 8th at home, barring injuries, which are happening at an alarming rate this season. That should be a far more competitive matchup the second time around. Unlike most teams, the Celtics have two guards in Jrue Holiday and Derrick White, who can take on the challenge of defending Brunson. Add Jaylen Brown to the list, which means they can switch everything on the Knicks. Hart admitted after Wednesday's game the Knicks must continue to improve on defense. They had their way offensively against the Suns, but still gave up 122 points on 48.9% shooting. New York has capable defenders in Hart, Bridges, and Anunoby, but can these three do the job on Brown and Jason Tatum? The Knicks are 22nd in defensive rating. That's not close to good enough to handle the Celtics. Towns can be New York's equalizer. He's always been a matchup problem because of his ability to shoot threes and score in the post. But Towns took too many deep ones in the middle part of his game in Minnesota. One thought he was allergic to the paint. However, he only jacked up 5.3 a game his final season with the Timberwolves, who made a run in the playoffs last season. He's once again at 5.3 a game in his first season with the Knicks. That's a good number for him. There are games he'll go over that, as was the case Wednesday, in going 3 of 8. But the key stat for him is 7 of 8 on free throws. When Towns is getting the line, that means he's playing physical in the paint and forcing teams to contend with his size in there. If he can find that balance, Towns will be held a handle for Boston, even with super veteran Al Horford and Kristaps Porzingis. If the Knicks can bring their physical nature yet defend the three, they are the one team in the East who can take down Boston. Philadelphia is all over the place right now. The 76ers have more than enough, with Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, and Paul George to battle the Celtics. But it's hard to trust they'll get it together. Cleveland has been tremendous in its 16-1 start. The Cavaliers are lethal on offense, but they trail by as many as 21 in losing by 3 in Boston. What about the Suns? This is pretty simple. Phoenix sorely misses Durant and Beal on both ends. The Suns are 19th in offensive ranking and 28th in defensive rating in this 1-6 stretch. The Suns are a bit weary after playing 7 games in 11 days. They most definitely could use the 5 days between games. Phoenix hopes Beal and Durant can return by next Tuesday's home game against the Lakers and get back to rolling, as Booker said Wednesday, but it isn't a given. They're going to reset a return to the form they did to start the season. Phoenix was winning the close ones, but that also means it wasn't putting teams away even with Durant and Beal. They still aren't a physical team and have problems against size like the Lakers and Knicks bring. The Suns are last in the NBA in points in the paint. That's not going to cut it even with Durant and Beal. Teams won't be able to double up Booker with Beal and Durant on the floor, but scoring isn't their issue. Defense is. The Suns are 21st in defensive ranking through 16 games. Until they improve on that end in terms of one-on-one defense and defending the three, 26th in the NBA in three-point defense, and the paint, 21st in point in the paint defense, the Suns will remain a team that relies on offense to win, and that's not going to be good enough to compete for a championship. And that ends the article, How Knicks Exploited Suns Losing Streak at 5, by Dwayne Rankin of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. And that ends the sporting news for today. We'll now turn to the opinions, and this one is by E.J. Montini, a columnist for the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. Phoenix police could run wild under Trump. I took an anthology class in college where we learned about an indigenous group of people who live deep in the Amazon rainforest. One of the unique aspects of this particular tribe was that parents did not discipline their children. That responsibility was given to an uncle. From their parents, children only received love and support. In this way, children were taught to behave ethically and avoid trouble while not being in conflict with mom and dad. I mention this because that is exactly how it has been lately with the Phoenix City Council, the parents, the Department of Justice, the uncle, and the Phoenix Police Department, the children. And all of that is about to change, perhaps not for the better. Because once Donald Trump takes office, Uncle DOJ will likely go away. At least that's how it looks. Last year, the Department of Justice issued a brutal 126-page report accusing the Phoenix PD of constitutional violations that ranged from using excessive force against people of color and Native Americans to seizing the belongings of people living on the streets. Since then, the Justice Department has been negotiating with the city over a consent agreement that could put the department under the supervision of a federal monitor. That's not likely to happen now. Trump's first attorney general avoided those arrangements, and that's what probably will happen this time around. Given the fact that talks between the city and the DOJ have not exactly been speeding along, it's looking unlikely that any deal will be worked out before Trump takes office. There are still problems within the department, however. That was made obvious in the ugly confrontation caught on body cameras between two Phoenix police officers and 34-year-old Tyron McAlpin, a black, deaf man with cerebral palsy. It happened after the DOJ report, when, theoretically, you'd expect officers to be operating on their best behavior. The attorney representing McAlpin in a potential civil rights case said, "What we have is an innocent person who's attacked by police while he's walking home to his own house. Phoenix police officers continue to violate the rights of African Americans and of the disabled." Mayor Kate Gallego and the city council have made changes that they said would improve police accountability. But critics are skeptical, justifiably so, since their actions seem to have more to do with appeasing the DOJ than addressing a problem. Once the Justice Department is out of the picture, however, the council is going to have to step up and be the grown-ups in the room, the kind of parents who take responsibility for the behavior of their offspring. Because once Trump takes office, there will no longer be an opportunity to cry uncle. That's the end of the article. You can reach Montini at ed.montini@arizonarepublic.com. And the title of his article was Phoenix Police Could Run Wild Under Trump. I'll page now to the horoscope for today. We'll begin with Aries, March 21st to April 19th. Playtime has come to an end. Pressing work matters needing your attention. Refocus your priorities. Taurus, April 20th to May 20th. Need to tie up loose ends in a creative project? Put in the finishing touches. Gemini, May 21st to June 21st. Analyze your needs in a partnership. Issues must be addressed. Cancer, June 22nd to July 22nd. All the things. Your schedule may be full to the brim. Getting your strategy together? Leo, July 23rd to August 22nd. To live in your heart takes courage. Are self-esteem issues triggering insecurities? Drill down. Virgo, August 23rd to September 22nd. A growing home or family matter may need your attention. Take charge. What can you do to fix the situation? Libra, September 23rd to October 23rd. Your mind is in evaluation mode. Need to work it out in solitude? Take a break to center and release. Scorpio, October 24th to November 21st. What resources do you need to realize your dreams? Make a list. Strategize to obtain. Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st. What's your next career move? You may have to shut one door so another one can open. Plot your plan. Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th. Reevaluate your personal beliefs. The last quarter moon in Virgo may question your life philosophy. Is it too practical? Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th. Can you trust a friend? Talk it out. Their insight can help you turn a page. Lastly, Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. Who you partner with can affect your career. Are you linked with the right people? Re-evaluate. And that is the horoscope for Friday, November 22nd, 2024. I'll close today with a few funnies. Here's Peanuts. The scene is Snoopy's on top of his doghouse, and he basically jumps off, runs over to a drinking fountain. He says, "Good grief, Woodstock fell through the ice. I was the one who told him to go ice fishing." As he runs toward the water cooler, "If anything happens to him, it'll be my fault." And the last scene is him hugging Woodstock, saying, "Are you all right, old buddy?" Next is Garfield. The scene is John's wife is standing there talking to him. John's wife says, "John, let's talk about our future." John says, "Flying cars." The next scene has John talking to Garfield. John says, "That's not the future she meant." And Garfield is saying, Dog Parks on the Moon. Blondie has Dagwood sitting at his desk at work, and his boss is rushing in. His boss says, "Bumstead, do you think you can handle writing the most important contract I've had all year?" Dagwood says, "I'll give it my best shot, boss." His boss says, "Fair enough." As he walks out of his office, his boss says, "I better hand it over to Turnbuckle." And Dagwood has this astonished look on his face. I'll close with Pickles. Earl and his wife are sitting together. His wife says, "I'm sure you could make more friends if you really wanted to, Earl." "But I really don't think you want to." Earl said, "You don't?" His wife said, "Nope." "What's your first reaction when you see a person walking toward you?" Earl says, "Avoid eye contact and hope they go away." His wife says, "I rest my case." And that ends the program for today. This has been the second hour of the Arizona Republic, the Friday, November 22nd, 2024 issue, brought to you by Sunsounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. It's been my privilege to be your Sunsounds volunteer reader. I hope you enjoyed the program today, and I hope you found it informative. Stay well, stay safe, have a wonderful week, and keep listening to Sunsounds of Arizona programming. And if you've missed an article you'd like to hear, go to the sunsounds.org website, and then click on Broadcast Info and Audio, then click on Demand. You'll see a list of articles available to you. Hopefully you'll find the one you're looking for. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today.